This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
They get in the ring at first. Oh no, he can't get in the ring. He's a pup.
That's right, he can't.
I have a feeling we're about to embark upon a most unprecedented expedition.
Everybody, and welcome to the fourth episode of Stacey and Elliot's
Bogus Journey.
Lance Russell here with Stacey and Elliot, and by golly, we're ready to go. Let me tell you who's going to be here. We got the Revival, Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder, and we've also got another exciting tag team from NXT, the American Alpha, Jason Jordan and Chad Gable, and they're two teams who could well have thrived in championship wrestling here in Memphis, But before that, we're going to take a look at, by golly, Elliot, we're going to see a man dressed as a box.
That's right. The other match we're going to watch, the other two matches we watched, because they're so special, we had to watch them to make sure we got all the callback spots and intricate learned psychology. We watched the Survival Tobita and Ken the Box match from August 23rd, 1999, and their rematch that occurred on... I'm actually not sure what date, but it doesn't matter because...
doesn't even matter.
It's not important.
Time is irrelevant.
What's important is that there's a man in a box.
There is a man in a box. Now I wish Lance Russell had commentated Ken the Box.
Oh, man. Okay, so...
Lawler taking on Ken the Box.
I guess I would like to see, you always want Lance Russell commentating, but, you know, I think Dusty would do a great job of calling a Ken the Box match. I think as much as I don't like Jim Ross, I would love to hear Jim Ross call a Ken the Box match and try and get it, like, in Mid-South, and, like, try and get it over earnestly.
Absolutely.
Instead of, like... it being a Raw comedy match. I would love to see, like, 1986 Jim Ross try and get this over. Like, the Dick Murdoch turning on Ted DiBiase and, like, brainbustering him on the floor so he could try and get the title match against Flair. Like, what if instead of Murdoch it was Ken the Box and Jim Ross was trying to put that over? Like, I think that would be...
Superimpose Ken the Box on every... Everything angle that's ever happened.
So we're off the rails completely
already.
At the very beginning.
But that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, that's definitely the way it's going to be.
There's no other way. You know what I was thinking as well? Is that I, like myself, I love... there's like dress-up things, like costume things. I always tend to like... make these big elaborate costumes made out of cardboard boxes. Like I went to a Mexican party like dressed as a piñata. Like I made a piñata like to like put over myself, a huge box. And then I made a fridge costume, like a refrigerator costume like recently to dress up in. And so I was thinking like literally it's entirely possible that if I was a wrestler, I would be Ken the Box.
You guys could be a tag team. It could be Ken and Kendra the Boxes.
The Boxes.
Oh my god. That's right. You made that Prince costume. You and Ken the Box may actually just share DNA at least.
Yeah, somehow, yeah. We share an affinity for the cardboard box. And so
for boxes. It's like you two and Maru the cat.
So, yeah, so I just, like, you know, I couldn't love Ken the Box anymore. And then I just remembered that, hang on, I do the same thing. I dress myself in a box. Yes, we should state, for the record, that on one corner we have Survival Tobita, who is an actual wrestler.
Ish.
And in the other corner... we have Ken the Box, which is actually a man dressed in a cardboard box.
With a tree stump head, cardboard box arms,
and cardboard box fists. And it's so good.
It's everything you could possibly want it to be. I mean, he, you know, the box goes all the way down to his feet, so he can't take long strides. So he's just taking little mini steps, which is fucking hilarious.
It's the greatest. When I watched,
he's doing a lot of spinning.
When I watched this for the first time and I saw him make his entrance and he was like shuffling out with his little Kinder Box steps, I was already losing it. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. The Kinder Box walk with his arms pumping.
Doing the arm pump.
That's the greatest entrance in the history of our great sport. I'm sorry, Shinsuke.
It really is. You know, you kind of, you see the match listing and you're like, okay, sure, whatever. Because you don't actually think it's going to be a guy dressed in a giant box. Like, there's no fucking way. That's too stupid to actually have happened. But it actually it's what they did.
This is real, folks.
It's the furthest thing from false advertising that has ever been. It is literally a guy in a fucking box that's coming out. Can't move because he's in a box. He's doing the Ricky Steamboat spin so everybody can, like, see him. Like, he's playing to the cheap seats.
Oh, yeah.
In front of eight people. They don't even have a ring in the first match, which is great.
No, it's just a wrestling mat. Like,
it's just in the
high school gym somewhere.
Yeah, or like in a storage unit. Yeah, it's hard to say.
It's so great when he came out because he has like the great dramatic music and everything, and he walked out.
1950s monster music is awesome.
Oh yeah, so good.
So perfect.
But which is punctured by the sounds of all these Japanese people giggling ferociously in the crowd. They're laughing so hard, you can hear it so clearly.
And like I said, there's only like 11 of them in the first match.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can hear each one individually.
Exactly. Every individual laugh is on the track. And, he's so good. Like, honestly, like his walk and his spin and his arm pumping thing and just everything.
And like the two branches, or like the two like twigs across his chest.
I was wondering about that because Survival Tabita like wears like camouflage gear, and I was wondering if like that's the stuff on his on the box was meant to be like camouflage or something. Like,
sure, why not?
I couldn't tell. But, like, yeah, there's some sort of like tree, like leaves or something hanging off him.
Like, I wish I could have been in the room when they made that costume and just seen, like when they finished, like, were they just like, yeah, perfect?
Yeah.
Or were they just nailed like, it. All right, fuck it, who gives a shit, let's get out there.
No. They nailed it.
I mean, they obviously nailed it. I want to know the sort of effort level that went into it. Because I hope it was a lot.
Well, as a cardboard box costume aficionado, I'm a cardboard box enthusiast. I would imagine the effort level was quite high, because mine was. It's so good. And then there's the match. The great thing about this match is that Ken the Box.
Which one? The second one?
No, well, the first one. Both of them, actually.
All of them.
Like,
yeah.
It applies to both of them. But the thing about Ken the Box, unassuming as he may look, he's actually the most ferocious, indestructible monster heel that wrestling has ever seen.
He's the most dangerous man alive. Well, is it that, or is Survival Tabita the stupidest man alive? No. Did he surpass Sting? As the dumbest baby face.
But
those two things intersecting.
Survival Tabita is the only man brave or foolish enough to take on the monster that is Ken the Box.
Oh, it's foolishness. It is pure. You can't fight a man like this, like Ken the Box.
No one can. He's not even a man.
I was just about to say, he's not even a man. Yeah, he surpasses, he's above all.
Oh, like, we'll talk about the first match for a bit, because I know that you like the rematch.
I do prefer the rematch. Yeah, I prefer the rematch.
Just to set the table for our listeners. The match starts, the first match.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt. The bell rings, and Survival Tobita, I mean, they start off, you know, cagey. They're filling each other out because, you know, Survival Tobita is trying to find a way, you know, to come at this monster.
Well, see, that's the thing that part of me is like, that's what makes Survival Tobita so stupid. Because my strategy with, like, I know that he's a monster and you don't want to get too close because he can get his hands on you if you get too close. But I'm looking at those hands and they don't seem very grabby to me. So, like, I would have, my strategy would have just been to charge him and try and get him off balance.
You should have tried wrestling with him.
Yeah, like, I
take him down.
She should have charged at him. Maybe throw a drop kick or, like, when he, like, maybe try and get him from behind when he's in, when he's going for one of his classic Ken the Box spins, and was playing to the crowd. That would have been my strategy. Would have been to have try and take him off his guard right at the beginning with like a quick drop kick or something like that. But Survival Tobita.
But I think that just shows you like the mind games that Ken the Box plays. That he's already beaten you before the bell rings because you're too afraid to even like to even approach him. You know,
you're even engaged. That is true. That is true. You know, you don't want to run directly into the belly of the beast.
It's psychological. It's like The Undertaker at WrestleMania, man. Like,
it is very much like The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
He's exactly like that. Yeah, so then they finally, you know, he goes for it, and Ken the Box just wallops him with a big right hand.
It's really the only box. It's really the only word for it. That's exactly what I was
going to say. he
walloped him.
He wallops him. Like, that is a wallop.
Yeah, that is a wallop.
Of a wallop. Yeah.
And what's great is you realize that the Ken in the Box's spinning isn't just a, you know, it's not just a crowd taunt. It's not just playing to the crowd, but it's strategy. It's tactical. He throws these punches where he's spinning, and they just get so much force on him that, like, what are you going to do? You're going to get knocked the fuck out.
Exactly. It's just, it's a wind-up, you know? It's just a massive wind-up. Get power behind the punch, and then bang, hits you on the rebound. And Survival Tobita, I mean, God bless him. He fought his heart out.
Yeah, he did it all he could, but,
He was trying. He'd get up, he'd try and get up and come back, but every time, he'd just get knocked down.
Once he landed that first punch, you knew that that Tobita was out of his element. It was somebody fighting on a higher. This was Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals.
Yeah, he was running on fumes after that first punch. Like,
yeah, I mean, they could have ended it right then and there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but he's tough. He got back up, but he was on another planet, man. He was done.
And you know what I loved about this, and we didn't even mention it, is that. Ken the Box is basically New Jack because his music played the whole time. But the only difference is Ken the Box didn't use any weapons because he doesn't need, his hands are lethal.
He had his bare tree hands.
He had his bare box hands. he didn't need weapons, but he did have his music playing the whole time. And that actually, from a performance art standpoint, it really added to the gravity of the whole thing.
It did. It really, really did.
It didn't just seem like a wrestling match. It felt like something bigger than that.
It was like a fight scene in a movie.
The final fight scene in a movie.
Taking on the monster.
Only it's setting up the sequel because the monster won.
Exactly.
In the end, yeah. So this was just brilliant piece of work. Not only is just a wrestling match, but just the presentation and everything. I mean,
the music during the match was so great.
It was really wrestling as art, not wrestling to make money.
No, it's from the soul.
To produce something really, truly special. This was like the Wire, really.
It is the Wire of pro wrestling. It's exactly right. Our comparisons just get better and better, I feel.
Yeah, I completely agree.
But yeah, so that's the stage. The stage we're setting from the first match. Survivor gets beat up, faces Ken the Box, and gets knocked the fuck out. 10 count, bell rings, over.
Yeah, the first match is really truly about setting up the second match, because I think the second match is where, I mean, the first one was on such a higher level than anything we've ever seen in wrestling before. It's like, how could you top it? And the fact that they were able to find a way to top it.
Oh, it's just amazing.
And you know, they topped it in the most traditional sense possible in terms of wrestling, is that what made the second match even better than the first match is that they added a wrestling ring to the equation.
Exactly. Just go back to, you know, traditional pro wrestling.
Take it back to all the way back to, you know,
exactly.
Joe Sacker, Ed Lewis, you know, Frank Gotch, Hankenschmidt. Jim Lundis, yeah, what did they all have in common? They wrestled in a ring. And
exactly, and
once
thus,
you add that
thus did Ken little, the Box.
Once you added that little bit of tradition to the Ken the Box experience, you get something truly special.
It was, because, you know, I will leave this to you, Elliot. Take away on the rematch, what happened?
What makes it so special is that Ken the Box can't climb into the goddamn ring because he's a giant box. And so... It's the most brilliant, the dumbest and most brilliant thing ever. You know, it's paradoxical in that way. And I was so overjoyed when I saw this for the first time, because, you know, naturally I watched the first one first, and then the second one is just labeled on YouTube, Survival to Beat vs. Ken the Box, the rematch. Never want to watch the rematch first. So...
Yeah,
he comes out, and I'm like, well, I'm thinking to myself, how's he going to climb into the ring? He's a box. Are there steps? What's going to happen? Like, you know, are there steps? And he's just going to, how's this going to work? And it was the most satisfying moment, really, of my entire life. And when he gets to the side of the ring, and he seems to realize himself, oh, I can't climb in this motherfucker. It's just brilliant.
So
you know, you take all of your deep All Japan psychology, and you can keep that. I'll take Ken the Box not being able to climb into the ring every single time.
The single greatest piece of wrestling psychology in history.
It's so logical. It's so logical. And that's what that... Like, it was a great move by Survival Tabita to really, really get the psychological edge right away.
Exactly. Like, he knew he had to come back with something, because he was beaten so soundly in the first match.
Exactly.
And then he realized he had
an
ace up his sleeve.
He's a pro wrestler.
He's
what
a
do
man.
They all have?
He's
they
a
have
man.
A, they have a ring.
Exactly. He has, you know, functioning arms and legs. He's not a box. He can get in the ring.
He can get in the ring.
And the light bulb goes off.
And what makes it all even better is that, like, they declared Tabita the winner.
Yeah, they counted him out because he didn't get in the ring.
He couldn't get in.
But
he could. But going back to my Tabita's the dumbest babyface in the history of wrestling.
He can't just take a win when he gets.
Can't just take a win. But that's the thing is, and that's what makes him such a brave hero, is that he realized that just because he won the match, he didn't win the war.
Exactly.
And he was still losing the war, even,
no victory.
Even in winning the match. Exactly. There was no victory, and a true hero is not going to just take a win like that. So without speaking Japanese, I'm just going to assume he demanded He demanded a false count anywhere match to be started right away, and the referee obliged for the sake of humanity, because he realized too that the monster wasn't defeated, even though Tabita won the match. The ring might have defeated him, but Tabita had to beat him.
Hmm. For the good of all humankind.
And so and again, like, when you're seeing it for the first time, it's just so wonderful, because Tabita, you know, all the, I won't take the win, I demand a false count anywhere, I want to fight him on my terms, or I guess on his terms, on the box's terms, false count anywhere. And so he runs out of the ring, and it's just the same thing as the last
And he match. Runs straight into a right hook from Ken the Box.
And that's what, that's the thing, that's what proves that Ken the Box is a real, real fighter, because, you know, there was my strategy that we talked about earlier of just trying to charge him right away. Well, Ken's ready for that, too.
Exactly. You can't get near him, because he will just put you down with those fists, man.
Absolutely. Tabita just runs right into just the biggest punch in history.
Hmm. And again, like, from that point, it's already over.
It's already over.
It's already over, but Tabita, you know, he's
God a warrior.
He's trying. He's a fighter. Warrior.
He's a fighter.
He gets up and, you know, tries again, picks himself up and tries again, but bang, down he goes.
And you could tell that this was, you know, you could tell that this was a big feud, because this was a much bigger crowd. I think there were, like, you know, maybe 50 people there this time.
At least. I mean,
at least 50.
Maybe 60.
Like, maybe 65.
They were hanging up.
And they were, like, you know, they all love Ken the Box, and that's great. You know, but, you know, Tabita went the extra mile in this one. That motherfucker bladed. Well,
he fucking bladed from a punch from a box.
The moment I said that, I actually, it occurred to me, that might have been hard way.
It might have been hard way, yeah. Like,
those
you
punches,
never know.
You know, he might have caught the corner.
Yeah, it might have been like a little, like, yeah, ripping the corner of the box. Because, I mean, the points of boxes can be pretty sharp. Like,
they actually can be. Fucking Christ, this is ridiculous. No, it's true though. It could have been hard way, and Ken was not holding back.
I don't think it's the first time that Ken the Box has opened something up. Like,
I mean, this was 2000 something Japan. Like, they don't hold back on their strikes.
Oh no, it's strong style, man.
Absolutely,
Ken the Box is strong style.
Like, yeah, absolutely. This is the land of, you know, Toshiaki Kawada and Shinya Hashimoto. Like, you can't just throw weak-ass punches.
Oh, no, no.
Expect to get over it. They got to make contact. And so it could have been hard way. Wouldn't surprise me.
Ken the Box is a stiff motherfucker, man.
It's just, it's everything you could possibly want it to be. And then it's so much more, so much more. He couldn't get in the ring. He couldn't get in the ring
because he's a box.
But it's funnier than that. Like, that's the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen in wrestling. Like, hands down. Yeah. It makes me so happy that it happened.
And it's bittersweet in a way, because in the end, Survival Tabita just he got knocked down, you know, busted open, knocked down again, and they counted to 10 and rang the bell, and he lost. He didn't get to come back and beat the monster, you know, like, because sometimes children, the bad guys win, okay? Sometimes evil prevails, and it's a good lesson in life, you know, for all the children, that sometimes you come up against a monster so fearsome, so evil, like Ken the Box, and there's just nothing you can do.
And what's crazy about it is this shit is fixed, so they could have had. But they created a monster so unbeatable.
They couldn't job him out in the end.
That even in this fake world, it wasn't believable to have the monster lose. No. So he just had to win.
It's not believable for Ken the Box to do a job. But
no.
But see, also, it's possible that, like, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't really know what was going on backstage at the time, but, like, it's possible that Ken the Box, nobody told him that wrestling is a work, and he was just, like, going out that he thought it was a shoot, brother. He's well, like, kill this guy.
Are we sure it wasn't?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, because he got knocked the fuck out. He was bleeding all over the place. busted him open hard way.
Are we sure it wasn't a shoot? I mean, you're, yeah, absolutely.
It's entirely possible. Like, it is it's one of those, possible. You know, one of those, like, you know, Takeda matches or whatever, where you're not really sure if it's a shoot or a work, like, it's hard to tell sometimes. This is one of those matches.
So who other than like everybody, what's your Ken the Box dream match opponent?
There are so many.
yeah, I mean the real answer is everyone.
The real answer is everyone. It's just yeah. getting around that. But if you want me to sort of pick some people out, I mean, like obviously I'm me. I really want John Cena to take on Ken the Box. Like, John Cena's perfect because he is, like, the super face, and he goes up against these monsters, you know? Like, there's the Great Khali, there's Umaga, there's Brock Lesnar, the Big Show, and now Ken the Box, you know? Like, it'd be great, and I think they'd really, you know, get a great match out of each other, I think.
It would be interesting to see Cena's approach, because those are different sorts of monsters. Because Ken's not, like, a big fat guy or, like, a big muscular guy. He's just a box, you know. He's indestructible box.
Exactly. So
I don't know if like picking him up and slamming him is going to have any sort of effect on him.
Well, exactly. Like I'm interested to see what approach Cena would take.
And I mean, there's no, you know, Ken takes the STF out of
exactly.
It's unusable to begin yeah. with. He doesn't have legs.
He can't put him on because he doesn't have legs. He's a box.
So what are you gonna do? You're just gonna AA him? Well, we all know it takes like 50 AAs to beat a guy.
Well, that's also true. I don't know.
A normal guy. That's just like Brock Lesnar. We're talking about Ken the Box. Is it gonna have the same effect on him?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not convinced that Cena would be able to pick him up.
Well, you know if Ken was dead. Then I think he could, but absolutely, if he's fighting back in the slightest bit, I don't think Cena could pick him up.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, Cena is strong. We all know, like he's the strongest wrestler like today. But...
Right, but he's not the smartest wrestler.
Well, that's also true.
well, I just didn't. Hate that I said that, because I actually think he's really smart, but we're pretending for this whole conversation. So.
But I mean, like, as an actual like kayfabe wrestler, Cena isn't smart because he's
right. Exactly. So I don't, crazy. I don't
like he does. He tries to pick up the monster even though he can't.
Yeah, and I think it would just fails, lead to him getting knocked the fuck out over and over again. So yeah, I don't
Cena
know.
Doesn't choose the easy way.
I don't think he has the brains to possibly like come up with a strategy to deal with this guy.
Hmm.
Other than just taking the win on the count out, which I don't think is about Cena's.
But that's not in Cena's nature either.
I don't know, maybe. I don't think Cena would do it, but I think the WWE would make Cena do it because they actually book him as a heel.
that's entirely possible, yes.
Yeah.
it's interesting. Who's one of yours? One of your dream opponents for Ken the Box?
Like one, so I think Invader 1 could actually have a legitimate like 3-star match with Ken the Box.
Well, I'm thinking about Cena too, but yeah, go on.
Because like the thing about Invader 1 is like he was such a great seller that I just like. You know, that Ron Starr match after he gets hit in the head with the chair by the little blonde valet, and it's just like the weakest chair shot, but it's the most incredible sell you've ever seen. I think Invader 1 could get like a compelling match out of Ken the Box in like a Dave Meltzer sort of way. And not
it'd be a great match. It'd be a classic.
Not in like a comedy match sort of way.
There's nothing funny about this, Elliot.
So with Invader One selling and like and his ability to have a really great match doing nothing but punching and selling, I think I would love to see Invader One.
Yeah.
Terry Funk's another guy for totally different reasons. I think Terry Funk is just smart enough to where he could have a legitimately entertaining match and have like a strategy against him. Again, he couldn't use his spinning toe hold, but I think he can figure out.
Yeah, you'd have to figure a way around it. That's what I think. I'm trying to think of like a smart baby face. Like I'm trying to think of a smart baby face. but I think of maybe a guy like Babyface Eddie, where he can like try and like lie, cheat, and steal his way, and try to find a way around the box.
Like, and at the same time, like, you know, bumping around and being able to keep the match entertaining.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just reacting to Ken. And I thought of another guy I want to see versus Ken the Box is The Undertaker.
Oh. Because wow, yeah, that's some immovable force versus
Yeah, exactly. See, like he would like if he faced The Undertaker at WrestleMania, he might sort of meet his match, but not really because he's Ken the Box. But like Undertaker is so great at reacting to a challenge, like because he's the Undertaker and he's the dead man, he lords it all over everyone else. When someone actually challenges him or like beats him up or like, you know, he sells that sort of like surprise so well. So yeah. I could just imagine Undertaker like making his entrance to come out to face Ken the Box and like taking it totally seriously. And then like when he tries to hit Ken the Box, and Ken the Box hits him back and Undertaker goes down, he would sell the, oh shit.
Yeah, guy, what did I get myself into?
So well. Sell it so well. Like the time Undertaker tried to headbutt Jimmy Snuka in the Rumble and he sold it.
Yeah.
that's what I'm thinking, how that would go down.
Undertaker's also like a clutch performer, so I could see him rising to the occasion and like withstanding a lot of punishment, and even giving Ken the Box like a run for his money. Because I mean, that's Zombie versus the Box, like absolutely. Exactly.
Undertaker is dead, and Ken the Box is a box. So like, it's just we're not talking about like mere mortals anymore. You know.
Exactly.
It's on a whole other level.
I think Undertaker has a clear advantage in that he can shoot lightning bolts. And if he lightning bolts Ken the Box one time,
it would catch fire.
He would catch fire, at which point you're in trouble.
Uh-huh.
However, Taker never he always demonstrated the ability to use lightning strikes, but he never went so far as using it in a match. No. So would Ken the Box take him to that level?
It's possible. Like that's the nuclear option. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
It's. Wow, but I mean, but he may have to.
He
may have to. Taker's never faced anyone like this before.
Luthez is another one that I would love to see Ken the Box against.
Well, again, see, Luthez's problem is that it's so hard to grapple with Ken the Box.
Yeah, exactly.
A, he has no legs. He's a box. And B, you can't get near enough his arms to, like, to put a hold on him because he will just punch you your lights out. Like, it's tough. He's gonna have to find a way to get in close, you know, to get past his range.
And he was just such a crotchety old timer who shat on stuff like Ken the Box.
Oh, he'd love it.
while doing, you know, traditional pro wrestling ridiculous things himself and just denying that he did when he was older. So it would be great if, like, somehow we just discovered a Luthez versus Ken the Box match.
I love it when wrestlers are like, you know, this other wrestling is bullshit, you know, as opposed to what I do.
Yeah, mine was real. Oh. Nah, they're just...
Get fucked.
Fuck that. Yeah, get fucked. similar to Thez, Volkan. Because I think it would be really great because Volkan is like, you know, he's everybody loves him, he's amazing, but he's only had like, you know, 55 matches. I think it would be amazing if like his 56th was against Ken the Box. And like we had this
beyond amazing.
It's like hope to like or wish that there could have been more for his career, and like he only had this many matches and one of them had to be against Ken the Box. And then I have a tie for my number one. I would love to see them against Ken the Box the most, and it's La Parca and William Regal.
God, Regal reacting to Ken the Box.
Exactly. I would just love to see the look on Regal's face when he came out from the back for the first time.
That's fantastic. And La Parca, I feel, I'm already like laying this match out in my head now, but like he's gonna come out and do his little dance at him and play the chair and then just get knocked the fuck out.
Well, they would also make a remarkable tag team, I think, La Parca and Ken. Well,
see, the start of the La Parca Ken the Box match would have to be like a dance off where like Parca would dance and then Ken the Box would spin around in a circle
and do his arm pumping thing. Yeah.
And then they'd get into it, and then, yeah, and then he'd knock La Parca out.
Yeah.
Now that you said that, I need Santino Marella to match with Ken the Box. We'll also probably involve a lot of dancing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, ridiculous. Because, I mean, like, Ken the Box, you know, he can't always be so serious and have serious matches with, you know, with legit guys. You know, he's got fun, too, you know.
He likes to party also.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not all, you know, blood and guts and legit wrestling.
No, he likes to relax. Vince would be great just for his facial expressions. Again, similar to Regal. And just like also the 5-alarm blade job, you know, that Vince would do to get this bullshit over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can imagine Vince. I remember when Vince faced Punk on Raw, like, probably might have been like his last match, actually, Vince had on TV.
I think it was.
And he faced Punk on Raw as like a, you know, 300-year-old man, and he still like took some stupid ass insane bump over the announce table, and
the slip and slide tope.
Yeah, the slip and slide, and it was just like, you know. I could totally see old man Vince doing that. Like in the Box.
I wouldn't want to see Shane fight him because I think Shane would just get killed. Like legitimately killed. And nobody really wants to see a murder.
No. There's a limit. And also, I don't want to see Shane wrestle anyone.
Exactly. Oh, I think Fujiwara would be great, because Fujiwara would kind of have that combination of Volkan, but also, like, the William Regal facial expressions, and then, like...
Can you imagine Fujiwara trying to headbutt Ken the Box? And sell it, and then he has to sell it.
Well, you think, you know, Fujiwara is the greatest defensive wrestler of all time. He could maybe... If anybody could figure a way to use Ken's overwhelming offense to their own favor, it would be Fujiwara.
That's true, yes. He might stand a chance. More than most, I would think.
More than most, absolutely.
There are just so many possibilities.
I think, you know, I'd like to see Mark Henry as the world's strongest man. He might be able to get Ken off his feet.
He may. Like, oh. Yeah.
Brock.
I think Sheamus could get into it with him.
Yeah, Sheamus would be good. Again, like, because you got to think about guys with big strikes. Like, Big Show would be good.
Yeah. You got to get the first shot in or you're done.
Exactly, like, exactly. I don't think anybody can just trade blows with him. Like, Ray Jr. wouldn't stand a chance, I don't think. Because you would think with smaller guys, you know, there's often the speed and quickness advantage. You often have the stamina advantage. and you can hope to kind of rope-a-dope them if you're just tough enough, or if you're like Ray Jr., where you're just fast enough, where you kind of keep away from your opponent and keep them running, keep them chasing you. But I don't think Ken would ever get tired because he's a box.
He's a box, exactly. And and the other thing is that Ken the Box doesn't chase after you, you know? Like,
he lets you come to him.
He waits for you to come to him.
He's so happy, like, to just spin.
Yeah, he would watch Ray run around him, but then as soon as he got, like, within range, bang.
It's over.
Push him like a fly.
It's over.
Poor Ray.
I don't know who could actually beat him one-on-one.
Like, I was thinking about Stan in two bulls going at it.
Oh, Stan would be good.
Stan might be able to match him.
That's a great point, yeah. Ken the Box is really the closest thing we have, or the closest thing to In His Prime Andre since In His Prime Andre. I guess I would say that In His Prime Andre is the closest thing we have to Ken the Box.
I think that's more accurate,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's more accurate. And we saw how well Stan did against In His Prime Andre, so yeah, that would be a great matchup.
Yeah, that's something. There's potential
The two bulls, yeah, because what does Stan Hansen do the first time he lariats Ken the Box and Ken doesn't go down?
Oh, tries it again. Judging from experience. And what about Andre?
Andre, I think, he's definitely the closest guy. Well, what about Abdullah?
What happens
when you stab a box?
Yeah.
But does he bleed? Does Ken the Box bleed?
Bleeds like packing peanuts.
Packing peanuts, yes. Oh my god. Holy fucking shit.
If Abdullah can get close enough to stick the fork in, then he may be onto something.
He may be on it.
He busts him open.
The best way to fight a monster is with another monster. Abdullah might be there's an argument for him as the greatest monster heel in history. And he might be the one.
Yeah, I think he has an advantage in that he's coming prepared with a weapon.
Exactly, because Andre Andre just used... he just counted on the fact that he was bigger than everybody and stronger than everybody. But when you're facing a box, I don't think that you don't have that power advantage.
No.
I think really I think it's the deathmatch guys that would have the best chance against him.
Mm.
Yeah, but I think Abdullah's the way to go.
Mm.
Yeah, because Andre's smart too, whereas Abdullah has the crazy to where he will just charge at him and start trying to stab him with forks and plunder.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing, though, is that what is Ken the Box's reach like? Like, vertical reach? Because...
Doesn't look very good.
Would he be able to get high enough to hit Andre in the face?
It doesn't look very good.
Because I'm now putting the great Khali on this list, because Khali is too, like, he's way too tall. I don't think Ken the Box can reach him to knock him out, to hit him in the head. So, and Khali can come down with the Chop of Doom on top of Ken the Box's head, and he won't be able to block that because he's a box. And so that may be his only way in.
However, Ken would have the speed advantage on Great Khali.
I think he could with his
chopping, Ken's chopping. I think he could hit Khali 5, 6, 10 times between before Kali gets him yeah. once.
Kali would have to get the shot in first, or else again, it, yeah. he'd just and, yeah.
And well, here's the other unknown: is how, like, would that one Kali shot even affect Ken on any level? Like, would he even notice it?
We don't know how hard Ken the Boxer's head is.
All we know is that he's a boss.
Exactly. We don't know because he's never been touched. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know. He may have one of those, like, you know, hard Samoan heads that you can't headbutt. And
I suspect he probably does.
Probably. Too. Like, judging from what we know about Ken's box, like,
yeah.
you know, he seems pretty solid. So, I don't know.
Kali also just doesn't have great balance. Like, I feel like you need to have, like, Stan or Abdullah would be good because like they're big but they still have a low center of gravity.
That's true, yeah.
So I think Kali, like one or two big punches from Ken and he's knocking him off balance, and if he gets him down to his knees, well that is just punch to the face yeah, level.
Boom, like
then
out.
You're done. Then yeah. it's over with.
Okay, yeah, yeah. See, it's so hard. It's very few guys in wrestling can actually just match up in any way with Ken the Box. So it's difficult to find, yeah, to find believable matchups for him. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we didn't see. That's why he's not still main eventing WrestleMania.
Well,
you know,
that's why. Like,
exactly. He just didn't have the competition. It wouldn't be fair. It's like Ken the Box wrestling regular wrestlers, like, you know. That's like when they have one of those 18-year-olds that's in the Little League World Series and he keeps throwing no hitters, and it's like, well, yeah, it's because he's 18 and he's facing 12-year-olds.
Exactly.
You know, and that's just Ken the Box. Ken the Box is the 18-year-old in a sea of 12-year-olds.
Exactly. It wouldn't be fair.
Wouldn't be fair.
Right.
So yeah, I think Abdullah would stand the best chance. I'd still put him in an underdog, but I think that he would be a good. I mean, Onita would be a good option, just because Onita has probably withstood more punishment than any other wrestler. You know, I mean, how many times has Onita been blown up? You know.
Ah, yeah. See, there's an X factor, like explosives.
Yeah,
if the Box had an explosive no rope barbed wire death match, like,
well, here's the thing,
because it'd incinerate a box.
Well, here's the thing with that though, is Ken wouldn't be able to get in the ring because he's a box.
That's true.
He doesn't have hands.
He's a box. I keep forgetting that he can't get in the ring because he's a box.
So really, like,
they'd have to have like on the floor, like
they'd have to like build it around him is the thing, because even would. If it was on the floor, I don't think he could bend down to get in between. I think he'd just have to like,
yeah, he'd have to come out and then they'd erect the barbed wire and the explosives around him.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, let's be real, he doesn't have time for that. This man's a major celebrity.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a box.
He's got women backstage waiting for him.
Exactly. I mean, his matches are so short. He doesn't have time to sit there and wait for Onita's, you know, minions to erect barbed wire around him. And he's such a smart, logical wrestler. He wouldn't put himself in that position.
No.
He would just be like, all right, Onita, you want it? You come and you meet me outside the ring.
Because
I can't get in.
Get in.
I mean, just I was so happy when I first saw that. Just
I can only imagine.
Like when he's walking out, I'm just thinking to myself.
I was so happy when I saw it. Like you, I was prepared because you told me that that's what happened, and then I watched it, and I was still so happy that it happened. I knew, but I was not prepared for watching it.
There's nothing that could really prepare you for it. It's so just so
you all listening
so funny.
To us, you know, for an hour talking about Ken the Box, and but you still need to go to YouTube and watch them, both of them, because Well, I mean, you know, you need the first one to set up the second one, obviously.
Exactly. All the learned psychology, you know, yeah. the way it builds.
It builds upon the first match so well. And yeah, and then you just, but you still, yeah.
The rematch is really, really, like, truly special.
It's something. It's the greatest match of all time.
So, it is. I don't think there's an argument. I think when people have like the discussion about like what's your favorite match of all time or what's the greatest match you've ever seen, I think there's an implicit understanding that we all have that these are the actual two best matches of all time, and then everything else that has ever happened is just it's next. So it's really like when I say that Sangre Chicana versus MS1 is the best match I've ever seen, I mean that it's the third best match ever.
Exactly, because there's an asterisk on everything else.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Matches, obviously. Yeah. It's just so happy and joyful to watch this.
Exactly. It's just so joyful. Yes. It's like one of those YouTube videos where it's like, you know, dog is happy to see his owner come back from Afghanistan or something like that. You know what I mean? like there's just so much joy in this where it's just like, I can't imagine anybody watching this and not like feeling warm inside, exactly. Like being happy for the world. And like, that's why we needed to do this, because this is a rough news week and we needed some Ken the Fox.
Both wrestling and without.
Yes, exactly.
And so, yeah, definitely, we all needed this.
We all needed.
And it's so good.
Mm.
This is wrestling.
Yeah, this is like everything that I could want wrestling to be. And you know, I didn't always think like that. And thank God, I can't imagine not. Thank God I do now, because like, I'm just so happy that I've seen something this ridiculous in wrestling. It's so great. I'd much rather watch something like that than so much other stuff that's out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm so glad you showed it to me too now. So,
well, and you watched. I love that you watched it on the train or on the bus.
I watched it. I decided to watch this match in public. I don't know why. But it was because that's the time that I had to find during the day to watch it. So I watched it on the train last night. You know, surrounded by people, and I could not stop laughing and spluttering the whole time. So everyone on the 6:09 PM train into Sydney last night, obviously you're all listening to our podcast, and I'm very sorry that I was a wreck, because I was a wreck. Yeah.
I hope that like at least one person like looked over and saw what you were watching and then like went home and told their friend about it.
I can only hope.
5 stars.
Five.
Best match of all time.
100 stars.
Yeah, this is the 6-star match. Everything. these are the 6-star matches, not that bullshit Kenny Omega match. No. These are the 6-star matches.
Exactly. I could not agree with you more.
All right. I think on that note, we're going to take a break and let the Place to Be boys pay their bills.
And we'll come back with the second match.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds, on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we're back and ready to talk about the normal wrestling part of the evening. After all that, we're going to like talk about a normal match.
This is the Triple H versus Jericho to the Hogan versus Rock that we just went through.
Exactly.
If you're still holding on, God bless you.
If you made it through all that. Yeah. We'll now talk about wrestling.
There are no boxes involved in this match, I promise.
Zero boxes. All men. But yes, we're doing my match now, which is from NXT TakeOver Dallas, April of 2016, just over a year ago now. The Revival defending the NXT tag titles against American Alpha. And I chose this match for many reasons. I told you I wanted to show you something from a takeover from NXT, and I definitely wanted to show you the Revival. But I also, like, I wanted to start at the beginning, because this is really, like, the beginning. This is the first big, like celebrated match that they had on this run. And I also want to give American Alpha some love, because they're getting beat up a lot lately by people who have just seen them on SmackDown or don't remember what they were like in NXT and are just like, oh, American Alpha, blah blah, how boring. But it's the main roster. Like, of course guys are gonna die on the main roster. It's just nature. But they were so good on NXT. And people love them in NXT, and they were so over. So I wanted to do a bit of a throwback to show you when American Alpha were great as well. And the Revival are always great.
Yeah, we talked for a while before we start recording the shows, and we chatted for a little bit during the commercial break. And I haven't mentioned it yet, kind of on purpose. But yeah, Revival, they're like my new favorite. For tag team, this was awesome. They're so much fun. They're such a cool tag team.
Like I said, they're like the modern Midnight Express. Like if the Midnight Express came up now.
Yeah, when you gave me the link to this, you were like, the only context you really need is that American Alpha is going for the titles. It's like a mini Steiner Brothers versus the Midnight Express, and that was such a perfect description for what this was. Yeah, the Revival are fucking awesome, and they are totally like the Midnight Express. You know, I'm not going to say they're that good.
No, that's but it's yeah, the same.
The same kind of everything. Yeah, absolutely. This was such a great like traditional Southern tag match mixed in. The cool thing about like Southern tag matches now or tag matches now is that they mix like the traditional Southern tag format, only they add now the, you know, either All Japan or Super Indie, like, near-fall finishing stretch.
Yeah.
And with tag matches, like, that doesn't bother me as much because there's four guys and there's saves instead of kickouts and stuff like that. So,
oh,
like,
yeah, exactly.
I actually think that there's really high potential for match quality in terms of, like, modern tag team wrestling because they get to combine, like, the best of both worlds of tag wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. It's traditional like Southern tag wrestling, but just updated with new moves. You know what I mean? Like I love it so much. All these great tag matches in NXT, I just love them. And this was the first one, like the first one that everyone went, whoa, these guys are great. Like, because it's so good. I'm not even sure how to say this, but yeah, and again, like, the American Alphas, like, they're such a great, like, pure babyface tag team as well. Like I said, they're like mini Steiners if the Steiners, like, sold anything.
Yeah, like, that's a great description. Even, like, their look, like, Chad Gable totally has, like, a smaller Scott Steiner look to him, like, he really does. And then they're obviously, they're great athletes. You know, we have the awesome suplexes from... It's Jason Jordan?
Yeah.
I keep wanting to call him Corey. I have no idea why. no idea why. But yeah, they're really impressive. The Revival I was blown away by. I mean, there's obviously like these are young greenish workers because there's some moments where things aren't like really smooth. But they'll get there. You can tell they'll kind of get there with experience. But in terms of like, just like understanding the tropes of tag team wrestling and like, you know, timing and misdirection spots and things like that. I was so impressed with Revival in this.
Oh yeah. So many things that they do, like all the work they do with the ref, like, you know, to distract the ref and do double teams and the things with the tags. You know, like, make sure it's a legal tag, and then they come in behind the ref's back and all this sort of stuff, like, you know. And like, again, it's just old-school stuff. It's stuff that they, like, you see in 80s tag matches all the time, but it's just, it had disappeared.
But there's a lot of really, like, creative, updated things to that, too, that you kind of touched on. Like, there's the awesome spot towards the end of the match where... oh God, Jordan does like the sprint up the turnbuckles, Kurt Angle, belly to belly, top rope suplex where he goes for it.
Yeah.
And I want to say that he's trying to do it to Scott Dawson and Dash is on the outside.
Yeah.
And he jumps up and he grabs Dawson's leg. So Jordan
doesn't go with him.
The belly to belly. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a really great, awesome, super creative spot.
Yeah. That was a great spot. I'd forgotten about that till I watched it again. I was like, yeah, that was great.
And like the thing that you always kind of want out of like your ideal sort of 80s style, Southern style tag match is that like the baby faces, it looks like the baby faces will win as long as everything remains on the up and up. And so the heels have to cheat to get the advantage.
Exactly. And
Revival did such a great job of putting that over. And, like, I really think that, like, the little things, like, jumping up and grabbing his foot and, you know, preventing the belly-to-belly is a great way of, like, that kind of manifesting itself. where they always need each other's help. They're not going to be one of them one-on-one, where you get the kind of a feeling that American Alpha, if they can just, you know, keep it clean, either one of them could beat either one of Revival.
All the things that they do, and that's the thing again, like the art of the baby faces getting the shine in the beginning to actually establish that they're better than the heels in a fair fight, like that has been so lost so much of the time these days. Like there are so many WWE matches I see now where like the match starts and the heel just immediately boots the face in the stomach and starts working on him, and I just think you are so dumb. Like,
and that opening, like back and forth, like arm draggy, hip tossy section had like the old school head scissor takeover by Gable, and then it led right to the tag, and then this drop kick by Jordan. Like, I mean, that is the most Rock and Roll Express like rip off segment ever, and it's great. Like, that's
fantastic.
If you're a young tag team, you should be taking spots directly from the Midnights and Rock and Roll Express. And I mean, that was just like such a perfect, just old school kind of 80s, you know, little sick segment in the beginning, to kind of just establish that babyface shine, where as long as things are clean, the babyfaces are better wrestlers. But, you know, the Revival, the heels, they're a better tag team, and they understand, like, how to use these misdirection things.
And they're more willing to cheat and use, you know, use these tactics to get, you know, to get ahead, to take shortcuts. Like, that's the whole reason why wrestling matches are structured why they are. Babyface shine, and then the heel cheats or does something to cut them off, and then they cheat to get the upper hand, and then the babyface comes back in the end. Like, that's the whole, you know, point. But so often that's lost in matches when they just don't know how to structure them. But this was structured so perfectly.
My real biggest, but like I would say my biggest criticism with this match is that they worked too quickly. Like, so it kind of didn't allow things to breathe. But like structurally, I think this was like, you know, perfect in that layout in terms of, you know, the babyface shine and then the heels take over and then the hot tag leading to now. You know, it used to be in the 80s, there would be the hot tag and then they would go directly basically to the finish. And now, you know, you need near falls to end the match. You need more big spots. So it kind of is extended a little bit more, which I actually kind of like. There's times where I'm watching an old like Rock and Roll Express match where they seem like they end too quickly a lot of times.
I really love the finishing stretch, because like they do near fall after near fall and they get like bigger and bigger, bigger moves and everything and that, but they never go overboard. Like, they never get to the point that's like some modern matches get to, where it's just, they're just doing big moves, big moves, big moves, and you're like, well, it should have ended 5 minutes ago. Like, they never hit, like, it ended exactly like when it should have, like at the exact right moment when everything was at its peak.
Right. And there were such great, I mean, there were such great saves, too, by both teams. I think especially their Revival. I was just so impressed with their like double team work and their, understanding how to set up spots and like how to save each other and stuff like that. I think my favorite spot of the whole match was the Dash climbing under the ring.
See, again, that's like they, you know, do these old school like feeling spots where like they take the guy off the apron so he can't tag, but they did it in like a cool creative way by like he actually crawled under the ring to get to the other side off the apron. Like, oh yeah, it's so good.
I thought it was brilliant.
At the point that they'd gotten to, they like teased the hot tag so many times. He's getting closer and closer, and then when Gable gets Dawson out of the way, and you think, yes, this is the point. It must be the point. Like, there's no one near him. He's going to make the tag. And then all of a sudden, he crawls out from under the ring, and you're like, oh, no! Not again.
It was so clever. I wrote, that was one of the few, like, because I didn't take very many notes on this, because it was pretty straightforward. But I definitely wrote that was, like, the greatest Eddie Guerrero spot that Eddie Guerrero never thought of.
Yes.
Like, I could totally see Eddie doing something like that, and it made me so happy.
Yeah.
I thought they just executed it, timed it perfectly. I thought the hot tag was really great. It was like a combination of the two classic Ricky Morton hot tags, where you'll get one where he dives and makes the tag as the heel like dives and just barely misses him, or he'll go under the legs and like, you know, roll and get the tag. And this, he dove, Gable dove, but they caught him. Revival caught him. So they pulled him back, and then he went underneath the legs.
Yeah, exactly.
And got the hot tag. Oh, that's so awesome and so well done.
That may have been my favorite spot of the match, where like he does the big dive for the tag, but Dawson just like grabs onto his leg and just pulls him down. Like Dawson dives himself at Gable to like grab the leg and pull him down so he can't reach. It was so like, yeah, perfectly timed. My God.
Just unbelievable. Yeah. how well that turned out. And then I love the, maybe actually my favorite spot was the, when they, went for the pin, Revival went for the pin. One guy puts his legs on the ropes, and then the other guy's on the outside, and he gets the towel, and he holds his legs. He drapes the towel over the other guy's legs.
Yeah, to hold his legs
even,
on the ropes.
Getting even more leverage, which is, again, good. Another, like, total old school technique, but, like, updated in this really neat, kind of new way that I'd never seen before.
Yeah, exactly. I'd never seen that before either. Yeah, it's so good. I also, speaking of old school spots, I love when they ripped off... It's like an Arn Anderson spot, like an Arn and Tully spot, where like you get the babyface to run out of the ring and around the corner, and from then they run around the corner and into the clothesline.
And that was a massive
from Arn, but in this case it was Dawson or Dash. I can't remember which one, but they did that, and that was like that was like the start of the cutoff. Like, yeah. The cutoff wasn't even, like, immediate like that. Like, it's, like, because...
No, they tease the cutoff.
Yeah, they tease it, and alphas still keep sort of getting out of things and still keep trying and still keep, like, arm-dragging their way out of trouble and stuff. And then finally, they get worn down by all the double-teaming and all the cheating and all this. And then finally, we're like, before, like, you even realize it, you're in the heat, you know? Like, it was a gradual process rather than just a bang cutoff.
Exactly. Yeah, it was very organic. It was very,
very well
natural.
Earned.
Yeah. Really impressed by all these guys. I've never seen any of these people before.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is why you need to watch some Revival matches.
yeah. No shit. And I'm absolutely going to start doing that. Like, this was awesome. Because I know that they have the one that like Dylan said was, you know, maybe the best tag match ever, or at least the best US tag match, and there's, you know, like, you know, everybody was calling it 5 stars, and so I don't watch these shows, so I asked you if it was this one, and I'm so glad that it's not this one and this was this good. Like, I can't wait to get to the classic one.
Yeah, this is just the beginning. Like, that's what I said. I wanted to start you at the beginning, because if you just dive into like the DIY matches later, like, you just, because everything just builds upon, like, because they have a rematch with them at the next takeover, they have a 2 out of 3 falls match against Alphas, and then, you know, and everything just builds off, like, they pay off so many spots that they set up in the first match, and then, you know, and then switch them up and stuff, and it's just, it's so good. And then again, and then they get into the DIY feud with Gargano and Ciampa, and their matches are great too. Yeah, and the one that they have this DIY in Toronto, was the one that everyone went
insane. Oh yeah, that's the one that everybody went crazy for. Yeah.
And that's almost at the end. Like, not the end, because they keep working, and then the Authors of Pain get involved this year in the tag title scene and whatnot. But like, yeah, but that was sort of the culmination of all the work rate tags kind of thing, like building up to that epic match. So yeah, I hope you watch more, because it's just, they're so good.
Yeah, I definitely plan on watching.
And as a series, even though they're like two separate feuds against like two different teams, but like just as a whole series of like 5 matches, I think, like 5 or 6 matches, it's such a great series of matches. Yeah.
I really love the finish of this match, where the Alphas finally get their own kind of blind tag. Like, the Revival the whole time, the whole match they've been making, it's put over how well they know each other, how they've been friends for their whole lives, going back to, you know, growing up in North Carolina. And, like, that's their real advantage, is how well they know each other. compared to the Alphas, who are, I guess, a relatively new team. And so the whole match, they're getting these, like, behind the back, you know, the Alphas are, you know, doing the classic, like, atomic drop spot, and it allows the heel to get the tag while the babyface isn't looking.
Yeah, so many blind tags and sneaky tags.
So finally, the Alphas get one of their own, which led to the big spear in the corner, and then the tag, the quick tag out to Jordan that set up their finish. And I thought it was just, like, a great little bit of, like, in-match psychology where, like, they're finally getting their own little teamwork behind the back thing going on, and that led directly to the finish and directly to getting the win.
Because
I feel like, you know, like I was saying earlier, you get the impression that, like, the Alphas could beat these guys one-on-one, but they couldn't necessarily beat them as a team because the Revival's a better team, and this was the Alphas showing that, hey, we can do tag team wrestling too.
Yeah, exactly. And as, like, and as a culmination of them, like, working their way up to the tag titles and then winning them doing that, you know, and it was, it's a great way to pay off all of that. The other, you know what was great, though? You were talking about how they were green before and some stuff got, like, missed in there. Like, the big
botch. It's not that things got, like, were missed, other than that big botch that we'll talk about. It's just that, like, they weren't quite, like, I think it was Gable early on when they were doing kind of like the arm draggy back and forth thing. He did kind of like a Lucha, like El Hijo del Santo kind of arm drag. It didn't really look that great. And I just, like, there were a few things in the match that, like, they did that didn't look great because they were, like, young workers and they hadn't gotten to the point yet where they either got that move down to where it looked smooth or just dropped it because it didn't really make sense for what they did as a wrestler.
Yeah, they were trying a lot of stuff,
So nothing that, like, really looked bad, I would say, but just, like, a couple little things here or there that was like, oh, that was, like, you know, that's, like, an on-the-rise wrestler move right there.
Yeah, and, you know, and I suppose that's what NXT is for, but, like,
right.
The great thing about the botch, because there was actually a botch in this match.
Yeah, big one. And they chanted Botchamania, which annoyed the fuck out of me. Oh, my God.
But, no, but the thing about that is that they whatever they were going for, like some top rope, like, convoluted thing Dawson and Dash were going for, and they screwed it up.
Yeah, it was going to be like a powerbomb with a clothesline bringing it down. Which, thank God they didn't, like, they could have killed him if they, like, just tried to go through with this.
Yeah.
They kind of gave up once they realized they'd blown it. And
yeah, because they tried.
Thank God, because they could have killed him.
Yeah.
They would have killed him if he'd connected with the clothesline.
But the great thing is that, like, the crowd knows that they've botched this. But anyway, the next thing that happens is that Dawson tries to pin the guy, whoever they were doing it to, Gable, I think. And the ref says, no, 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 you're not the legal man. You have to tag out, because the wrong man was in the ring and tried to pin him. But the ref remembered that he wasn't the legal man, and he made them go out and, like, do a proper tag and everything. So the great thing is that by the time the crowd had begun chanting, you fucked up, it looked, if you're just watching on telly, it looks like they're chanting, you fucked up, at the heels, forgetting which one was legal.
Right,
so it became like a great accident of, you know, of circumstance that it sort of worked out in the end, because it sounds like the crowd is chanting, you fucked up, at the heels, screwing up which guy was legal or not, and not the actual botch. Like, it's one of those happy accidents. I just laughed at that when that happened. But that's the other thing about NXT, you know, and takeovers, like, particularly, but NXT in general, is that it's so much nicer to watch NXT because they present everything properly, they allow guys to get over, they encourage guys to get over, and the crowd loves these people. Just loves
and they
participate, you know, and they get it, because the crowd, you know, already at this point thinks that the Revival are great workers, but the crowd, like, the Revival come out and the crowd boos the shit out of them because they are the heels.
Yeah.
And they love the Alphas. And throughout the match, whenever the Revival cheat or do something mean, they are booing them. And whenever the Alphas come back, they are popping and loving it and cheering. And, like, even when, like, even when Revival, like, does, like, cool stuff, like, cool double team moves or whatever, they're not cheering them and chanting, you know, that is awesome, blah, blah. Like, they're booing the Revival's near falls, and they're cheering when the Alphas kick out because they want the Alphas to win. They're the baby faces, you know? And I just, it's so much nicer to watch wrestling like this.
Yeah, instead of having...
Instead of smack, like, asshole crowds, or instead,
like,
of...
Chanting for, or, like, cheering for the heels double team because it reminds them of the Midnight Express or whatever. Yeah. Or they think it reminds them of the Midnight Express.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Or, like, or the indifference that you get so often from, like, watching Raw or SmackDown or whatever, you know? Like, it's just, it's... NXT is just such a lovely... magical, happy place. Like, I can't explain. Like, even now, watching, like, I told you and Matt this before, watching that Revival match back so that I could show it to you, it was the first time I've ever gone back and rewatched a match from a takeover. Because I absolutely love NXT takeovers. I love every single takeover there is and every single match on a takeover. And I come away from them, you know, feeling so much joy and happiness in my heart about wrestling and about the entire world. And I don't want to sort of go back and watch a match out of context like that because I'm scared that it'll just ruin it, like ruin the fantasy. And
right.
So I watched this just to be able to show it to you. But I still had the same feeling watching it. When I watched it back, I sat here and I just watched it, and it was so joyful and fun and just great tag team wrestling and a happy ending and just everything you could want out of it, like, out of a great wrestling match. And it still fills me with so much joy. And honestly, if all I watched in wrestling was NXT, I would be so happy. Because, you know, other wrestling and WWE, you have to deal with all the bullshit to get to the good stuff. But and it's not to say that everything in NXT is good, and even, like, weekly TV can be, you know, good or bad or whatever. But, like, the entire presentation and just the way they do it, and it's just simple pro wrestling, old school in a studio with good booking and great characters and good announcing that puts everyone over and a appreciative crowd that cheers for their favorites and boos the heels and chants along and sings along to everything, and they're into it. Like, it's just, that's how wrestling should be, you know? That's how I
think it
should be, and that's why I love it so much.
It's so weird that it's the same company.
It's just, it boggles my mind that it's the same company.
It's so weird.
After every single takeover. NXT is a magical, happy place. And that's just a small piece of it for you.
The only, like, I haven't watched a complete takeover ever. I really like the NXT stuff that I've seen is, like, you know, the women's stuff. So this was great. You know, this was really, really good. It was a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to watch a lot more of the Revival because, like I said, they're, like, my new favorite tag team. I mean, it was all the little old school things they were doing was so great. I mean, it really was like you said, it was like the mini Steiners versus the Midnight Express. And I was like, okay, sure, whatever. But it really was like,
yeah.
It really, like, they really did remind me of the Midnight Express. They took a lot of spots directly from them. And then, like, added little updated additions along the way, which was great.
Yeah, exactly. And I even the American Alphas, like, they're ripping off, like, Rock and Roll Express openings, you know what I mean? But they're also
Absolutely. They're also
putting their, like, their unique, like, amateur wrestling, like, things and stuff like that. Like, I remember early on, like, really, really early in the match, Gable did this, like, wicked, like, it wasn't even a German suplex because he was, like, on the ground, but it was, like, a waistlock takeover, like a German, but he was, like, sitting down, and it was just part of when they were rolling around in the beginning, arm drags and stuff, getting, you know, and he ended up doing this flipping, like, German suplex throw thing from, like, a seated position, and it was so cool that the crowd, like, popped for it when it was just part of, like, a rolling around sequence. the crowd saw this, like, you know, pin, like, takeover, and they were just like, oh, like, they were like, they were, they, and they pop, like, for, you know, for amateur wrestling, stuff like that, because it's so cool what they do. And again, it's frustrating that they got brought up to SmackDown and were given nothing to do, nothing to explain who they are or get them over, just have them go out there and do their NXT act like robots, just doing the same thing every match, regardless of, you know, what was happening. And they, you know, don't give them anything to do and then wonder why no one cares about American Alpha anymore. Like, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, that's WWE.
That's WWE.
I think it's so weird that, like, Chad Gable's in the WWE and not, like, trying to become an MMA shoot fighter and make UFC, you know?
Yeah.
It just, you know, WWE, they don't get as many, like, former collegiate wrestlers anymore because they're all trying to go into UFC. And it really kind of makes me wonder if there's a market or at least an opportunity to, you know, maybe, I don't want to say, like, have shoot fights on WWE TV or, like, Brawl for All at all, but, like, something kind of shoot style-y to kind of with, like, you know, kind of take advantage of these guys who are trying to make it big in MMA and either can't get there or, like, you know, attract collegiate wrestlers like Gable. And, like, we kind of talked before that I can't remember if it made a previous show or if it was something that we talked about before or after we recorded, but one of our previous shows, but, like, we talked in the past about how cruiserweights aren't really special anymore because everybody wrestles like a cruiserweight. Yeah. Like when Seth Rollins is in the main event wrestling like a main eventer or wrestling like a cruiserweight, and you know, you have a cruiserweight match in the middle of the show and, like, it's worked the exact same way, there's no way for them to stand out. Well, like, I don't know, maybe they could have, like, a little shooty sort of division where they have, like, these former amateur guys or, like, you know, former MMA fighters where they have more, like, grappling and stuff like that and kind of embrace, like, the grapple fuck style. Because, I mean, with guys like Biff Busick and Timothy Thatcher, who are, like, great and can absolutely, like, can definitely work that style, you kind of wonder if maybe that's a shift that WWE will go towards. Like, it's just weird to me that the only way that they've, like, really embraced, like, mixed martial arts is, like, manifests itself in Shane McMahon.
They spend so much time trying to get over Shane as an MMA fighter, and I just think, like, well, why don't you try that on your actual wrestlers? So yeah, right. I agree. It is very much a missed opportunity, I think. And yeah, it definitely would be a way to have a division that actually stands out as opposed to everything else on the show. Like, it, and yeah, and there is, like, they already have the core of it there anyway, because they have guys like Busick and Drew Gulak already in.
Right.
On television, you know, just they try, you know, trying to do their little spots in cruiserweight matches.
And I'm not saying it has to look like rings. You know what I mean? It can absolutely be like a more just stylized version of it. It can definitely be more like UWFI. Like,
yeah.
Only modern.
Like grapple fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that would be great. And I think it could actually get over. And, you know, the fewer moves off the top rope, the fewer, you know, the fewer back bumps and, you know, neck bumps and shit like that, the healthier your roster is going to be.
Well, that's true. And they at some point, they're going to have to do something to get away from
injuries.
Exactly. Exactly. And the danger and how many Daniel Bryans do they want to have, you know?
Exactly. And I always contend that, like, the saddest thing of, well, it's selfish to say it's the saddest thing, but, like, what really sucks about Daniel Bryan having to retire when he retired is I think that he was just approaching his peak as a worker.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't think we had seen it yet. ROH.
He is so young.
Exactly. He's like, you know, I wrote something on the board once about it, or I think, you know, he retired before, like, 1980, he was younger when he retired than, like, 1983 Terry Funk by, like, 5 years or something like that.
Yeah.
He wasn't close to, he retired before a lot, like, you know, the equivalent of Ric Flair's 1989. Just like so many of like the all-time great wrestlers peaked in their late 30s, early 40s, because they still had that athleticism, but they hadn't lost all of their athleticism. They still had 70 to 80% of it. Yeah. Only they also had, you know, decades, all the smarts to pair it with. Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, yeah, I would like to see WWE do it because I like shoot style, obviously, but like, I think it would be beneficial long term for these guys' health.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. That's true. And you have a guy like Chad Gable, who can do so much athletically and physically, like as a wrestler, but he never gets, you know, never gets the, really that opportunity to show it.
Right.
Really. So it's like, yeah.
They'd rather he be Kurt Angle.
Exactly. Yeah. And now that's all they do on television, you know, and it's, yeah.
That was always I think everybody says that's the thing about Angle that irritates them the most is that like he was an Olympic wrestler, but he was so stupid he would allow himself to get out wrestled by Shane McMahon and stuff like that. And
yeah,
you know, it's just, it was a total waste. That's the guy who's like career. I feel like his career was like the darkest timeline, even though for what could have happened for him, even though he was like, you know, he became world champ and a major star and all that, but just like, he was so far removed from what separated him from everybody else.
Mm.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on Kurt Angle.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Don't get me started on Kurt Angle, because this episode is happy special fun time episode.
This was happy special fun time episode.
There's nothing
absolutely
but joy and puppies and rainbows and kittens and
boxes. Most
so important. Many boxes.
So all of the boxes.
All of the boxes. It just, yeah, so much fun to watch and to talk about. So hopefully. Hopefully you all had fun listening to us talk about it, and hopefully you all go and watch Ken the Box. And the other match, too.
The other match, too. I'm sure everybody's seen the other match already.
Yeah, most people have seen the revival by now.
I'm like the last person
stuck
in
the
world.
Stuck in the dark ages.
The stuff. Yeah.
But definitely go and watch Survival to Beater and Ken the Box.
And I feel like most people listening probably would have seen those too, but they're always, I mean, you can, I mean, I know I can watch that rematch, especially from now until the end of time.
I will now too.
And like, I think it's really important to watch the whole videos. Like, I think it's really important to watch the entrances, because Ken's entrances are just magical. Yeah. And then Tobita does the, like, you know, Atsushi Onita ripoff.
Yeah,
screaming,
the crying
like,
promo. That was like one of my favorite parts of the first match, when Ken the Box had left the arena and everyone was just, and then he finally like regains consciousness and grabs the microphone and cuts this wailing Onita promo on Ken
while
the Box.
Everybody's laughing at him. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's...
Yeah. But he was so serious. Oh god, it's just, see, there's still so much fun to be had, so yeah.
If you've never seen it, drop everything and go watch it right away. And if you've seen it before, drop everything and go watch it again.
Exactly. Do it now. I don't know what the hell we're gonna do next time, but we'll figure it out.
Absolutely. Probably something a little bit more serious, but you know, that could be anything.
You never know.
See you. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. See you next time.